Muddy Knees Media.
And welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. It's Kate Borsay and Lindsay Hooper here. On the agenda today, the FA Cup fourth round doesn't disappoint. It's goals galore with no less than 61 scored over the weekend.
The Aussie invasion continues.
Very well done.
Do you like it? As Caitlin Ford's transfer to Arsenal is confirmed, and we're speaking to the departing Nick Cushing as he looks ahead to his final week in charge of Manchester City and what a couple of games he's got to go out on.
Joining us on today's show, singer, songwriter, record producer and big football fan. Hello, Shora.
Hello.
Now, it's great to have you in.
Yeah, and this is a little known fact. You're not just a football fan. You played with Manchester City until you're about 16. So much of your young years, or many of your young years, were spent knocking a ball around. This is a very interesting fact indeed. Just tell us a little bit about how it worked with your life at that time.
Well, I think when I was a kid, bizarrely, my dad hates football.
Okay.
Absolutely hates it. And he had two sons and a daughter, and he spent a very long time, put a lot of effort into making sure that his sons would not play football, enjoy football. And kind of I got to about six or seven years old, and he had a girlfriend at the time who was a big West Ham fan. And I sort of became curious. And at about that age, I turned around and said to my dad, I'd quite like to play football. And he was like, oh God, I did not see this coming, because he spent so much effort kind of preventing my brother.
How did he do that? Was it because he just shoved rugby at them? Or no?
I mean, he doesn't like sport, stop. I think the only thing that he watches is Wimbledon. He's just not a kind of sporty guy at all. And yeah, so I kind of at that age started playing, and I kind of was a massive tomboy. So it didn't even ever occur to me that this was something maybe that girls weren't or didn't do, or I just sort of ignored all the weird looks I got from boys at my school. And actually, I for some reason, I think maybe because I'm very competitive, got quite good. And I ended up playing in kind of tournaments in primary school, you know, in mixed tournaments, and was scouted at kind of the age of 8 or 9 by Manchester City.
For Manchester City.
Yeah. And
we'll talk more about your career a little later on. But I just wanted to find out what your kind of key defining, whether it was positional, whether it was a move or not you had, how would you sum up you as a youth footballer? Which bit of the game was your forte, do you think?
So I was famous for something that I wouldn't be able to get away with, I think, in today's game, which is the slide tackle.
Oh, yeah. It's dying.
Yeah, sadly, but also it's a good thing because, you know, if it goes wrong, it's pretty damaging to another person. But I have to say, I always got the ball.
That must have hurt on those primary school playgrounds.
You know, I know I did. Well, I mean, my knee at the moment is covered. I mean, I'm playing again now for the first time in a while. And I have to say, I had forgotten how much pain you end up being in if you do end up on the floor, especially on the kind of turf and stuff. But I didn't slide on the concrete. No, that would have been
horrendous.
Can I ask you briefly? So before we come on to your career a bit later on in detail, you know, there's Chelsea Grimes, footballer, music, monkey DJ, likes music. There's this music link in women's football. There seems to be quite a few examples.
Yeah, Georgia as well, I think, plays football. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
You know what? I have absolutely no idea.
Do you know what it could be? It could be that, unlike my generation, I'm 41, sure, 28 or so.
Yeah.
You know, you were exposed to football a lot more at school. You were often taught it at school more than I ever was. So just perhaps it's because a lot of these artists were
No. I played a lot of football at school and I can't sing. I've not got a musical bone in my body.
It's debatable whether or not I can. So.
Oh, sure. We know you released an album last year, and we're going to be hearing tracks from you throughout the show. So if you wonder who the music is, look her up. It's Shura, and we'll be listening to more of her tunes during the show and finding out a little bit more about you, a life in music and a life in football, and how that works together.
In fact, let's do that now. on to the football business. We'll come back to the music business. FA Cup fixtures. So 16 games.
Such a good link.
Made up of the fourth round of the FA Cup at the weekend. So every WSL side taking on lower league opposition avoided a cup upset. We've got none of those to talk about. But there were some very interesting ties for us to take note of. We'll go into some more depth and get the results that caught our eye, starting with a closer look at the very much anticipated Manchester derby. Now, derbies don't always deliver, but this one did. If you're a neutral, five goals. Reigning champions Man City made the short trip to Lee Sports Village to take on Manchester United. So City coming out on top. The game finished 3-2 to the away side. Two goals from Ellen White. But United fans not at all happy after what looked like a clear goal was ruled out for not crossing the line.
Robert can't come for it. And it's surely over the line. No! It looked over the line. The assistants on the far side said it hasn't crossed. Lizzie Arnott's puzzled. And of course, there's no goal line technology to help us out. It just seemed like it was over the line when Roebuck clawed it back. That's my gut feeling. It's not the referees and it's not the assistants either.
Kate, you've been watching this one. Shora, you were watching it as well. What were your thoughts?
Well, I was quite stressed out for the first half hour, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, it's a conflicting fixture for me, having played for Manchester City, but being a Manchester United fan.
Oh.
But I have to say, in the women's game, I always support City out of loyalty to my roots. But yeah, I found the first half hour stressful. I thought there were quite a few loose balls from the back, which can often happen, I guess, in a derby, in a big game, because you're nervous. And I guess, interestingly, there were quite a few loose balls from City, but it was the first goal came from a loose ball from United, and the one person you don't want the ball to fall to is Ellen White. But yeah, it was a stressful opening, but I enjoyed it. It was really good fun.
It was a frantic first half as well. It's Abby McManus for Manchester United who made the error that led to Ellen's goal. And you don't want Ellen around when you make those mistakes. But it did take half an hour for City to get on the score sheet via her, actually. I know that we're chatting to Nick Cushing later, so we'll have to find out what he thought. But I know that after the game, he was like, honestly, derbies, just ridiculous. But they did settle down in the second half. Although I thought, actually, for most of the second half, that United were actually on top. A really good goal from Lauren James. Did you see this one?
Yeah, no, I did. I did. It was brilliant. There was some great goals, and also potentially a goal that never was. But again, we really couldn't see it. It was from the angles that I kept kind of on the replays watching it, and I was like, it's so frustrating that there's.
What did you think, Lynn? So this was Abby McManus again, who had an attempt from close range, but there was lots of goal mouth action going on. I thought, from Twitter and from the stills I saw, I thought it looked like it crossed the line because Ellie Roebuck appears to, I mean, look, maybe she receives it over one side of the line and then bundles it back into the goal. I don't know, but there was definitely a little bit of movement and it involved Ellie Roebuck's hands.
It did. The thing is, she was quite clever. I don't know whether intentionally, but because of where her arms are, you can't actually see properly whether the ball has fully crossed the line or not. And that is the definitive rule. And the problem is as well, without goal line technology, without the proper cameras that are on the goal line, if you're taking one from anywhere else, the angle can be deceptive. We've seen it time and time again in different examples in the men's and women's games where you could have a goal that's clearly over the line in one picture and then from another angle it looks like it isn't. So it's so difficult. My gut reaction was that I thought it might have crossed the line because of reactions. You look at different players' reactions, but
look,
I do think
faces,
that
yeah.
Ellie Roebuck was yeah. very quick to bundle it back over.
Yeah,
again.
I mean, the first thing that I always look at is the goalkeeper and the defenders of the team who might have conceded. And I think normally you can sort of tell if a player is like trying very hard to not draw attention to something, that can sometimes be an indication of the fact that they know. It's a bit like kind of when someone fouls someone and they're suddenly very quiet and don't kind of really try to pretend like yes. it didn't really happen.
It's a giveaway, it sure is.
The only thing that did surprise me was that there were some protests from Manchester City players, but it didn't feel like everyone was in uproar about it.
Whichever way it went, I think United do feel sore. I think that's safe to say after Katie Stoner's comments after the game. And fair enough as well, actually, they had more shots at goal than City in the game as a whole, and you know, definitely took it to them.
I think there's a lot more attempts nowadays in the women's game across the board for bits of flair, bits of creativity. We saw that back heel, Demi Stokes was involved
yeah, yes.
in one, and I'm loving seeing that in the game because I think the thing that you can't dispute is that the skill base of women's players is so lovely to watch, yeah. and it might not be quite as fast as what the men can play sometimes, but the skill factor
yeah.
is there.
that's sort of understandable when the level of investment in the women's game isn't as high.
And how far behind we still are. Yeah, everyone still thinks, you know.
I mean, just to take it back to, you know, this is not talking about the skills at the moment, but just look at the camera angles. Look at the fact that we are debating that goal. Okay, goal line technology, I think we're a long way from that in the women's game. But one thing we know we could do that's not going to be excruciatingly expensive is more camera angles or better camera angles. Like, I was very frustrated watching the game that was all
because you couldn't see it properly. Yeah.
And often you see these games and there's just one camera and I mean you can't really get it.
Or you can't watch them at all. I mean, I had a friend tweeting that you know, there are 11 games kicking off and not one you couldn't watch a single one.
It was incredibly tough. I mean, I saw highlights on the BBC of the Manchester Derby. There were little bits and bobs floating around on club websites, etc. But very, very poor.
The competitions in particular are the ones that I think suffer and are ignored.
And also
more.
At this stage as well, when the WSL sides come into it, the FA player, I think, should have perhaps been across a little more, or at least spoken to clubs to try and get a bit of highlight footage together. Mm. But there is a big glaring hole in the FA player's website where these matches are meant to be.
It's sad when the only way you can sort of watch a game is a live stream from the fan's Twitter account, you know, or a fan.
Or just literally looking at a random journalist's. I mean, I was at the Chelsea game yesterday, Charlton-Chelsea game, and I did try to film and post as much on Insta as I could, but, you know, typically I kept missing the goals. And in the second half, I wasn't near the goal enough. My view was blocked. But yeah, it's tough. Tough indeed. All right, should we move on to matters on Sunday, Linz?
Yes, goals from Katie McCabe and Leah Walty sent 14-time winners Arsenal into the fifth round of the FA Cup. Joe Montemurro was looking for a reaction from his players following that 4-1 defeat to Chelsea last week. He got it with a 2-0 win at last year's runners-up West Ham. Now, Matt Beer did opt for three centre-backs with this one. England under-20 captain as well, Grace Frisk, joined in December. She slotted in alongside Gilly Flaherty, and I thought she impressed, actually.
Yeah, she's a good signing for them. And I think it's basically interesting how he packed out defensively for this one. How did Arsenal look, Linz, after that defeat to Chelsea? Because this was really imperative, wasn't it, for them to get back on track?
It was. And I think he got the reaction from them that he wanted. Both goals, very good goals, nothing by chance about them. It was a very structured performance. McCabe, that was her first Arsenal goal, and what a volley it was. So she really excites me. In fact, this Arsenal team from front to back do. The 4-1 defeat to Chelsea, I think, is a little bit of an anomaly if you compare the rest of the season. And I thought they got straight back to where they were before. It is when they come up against sides that the Manchester Cities, which they will do in the Conti Cup this week.
And then again in the WSL as well.
Yeah, those are the real challenges now, is against the Manchester Cities and Chelsea's, and who is the better. But here, I thought it was pretty standard stuff from Arsenal. And yeah, I don't think that West Ham ever looked really like they were going to score. Well, on to the game that you were at next, Kate, because you were at Charlton, your local club. They got beaten 4-0 by Chelsea. I think you went there half expecting that they would get beaten. But in terms of performance, what did you make?
Well, this was a lovely FA Cup tie in that I took my other half and I took my two kids along as well. Because, you know, if you've never been to the Oakwood, it's the home of VCD Athletic, proper depths of South East London. It's in Bexley. It's a great ground to go for if you want a burger, if you want to make sure that you are, you know, heads up close to the action. There's a little stand there as well. And actually, to be fair, I think there were more Chelsea fans than Charlton fans at this one. 944 in attendance. I think it's just over 1,000 for a sellout. And the sort of club had been warning about the fact that tickets were going quick. But not quite the drubbing that you might have expected. You know, Emma Hayes rested the likes of Sam Kerr. There was no G, no Erin Cuthbert. And I don't think we were really kidding ourselves that they were going to be there, really. Beth England was on the bench. But Charlton played well, defended well in the first half. You know, they went into the break, Chelsea only 1-0 up, and that was really down to the resoluteness of Charlton. There was an early sub, so Guru Wrighton on for Ramona Backman. That happened at around 30 minutes, and that made all the difference, actually. Until then, Chelsea were really struggling to link up. They looked like a bit of a team of misfits, which is probably what they were. They hadn't had a lot of playing time together. Then, in the second half, different story, really. Three goals in the second half. There was another one from Drew Spence. She was the player who'd scored in the first half. And two from 16-year-old Emily Murphy. This is a great story. She's an academy graduate at Chelsea. She made her first competitive start for the senior side after scoring in the Conti Cup a few weeks ago. And for a 16-year-old, Emily Murphy looks great. And it's such a great story. And I think about you, Shira, as well, giving up the game at 16. And then you've got this young, I mean, of course, she's been supported 15,000 times better than you would have been. happen at that age. But does it ever make you think, when you sort of hear about 16-year-olds coming on and tearing up the WSL, what would have been?
Actually, my first thought that I have is that I'm so happy that that's possible.
Yeah.
For someone else. I do get emotional. I remember actually when it was the Women's World Cup and you know, it was everywhere, and my dad had said to me, oh, it's a joke. He sort of said, oh, it's a good thing that, you know, women's football wasn't as big back then, because you probably would have ended up being a footballer. And I remember...
You never won him over then.
No, the thing is, he secretly loved watching it now with me. But the weird thing is I paused for a second, and I found myself tearing up, and I said to him, just sort of, I would have loved to have been a footballer, actually, and just, it's probably the first time that I'd ever sort of said that out loud.
Yeah.
And I think I was just maybe a little, it was just a bit too early for me, but I can still play now.
Yeah, there you go. That's, it is not thing. Too late. So an exciting one. 16-year-old Emily Murphy for Chelsea, final score 4-0 to Chelsea, who advanced through to the fifth round.
Durham next. They were away at Bristol City. This one had all the makings of a cup upset, because it went into added extra time. Durham quarter finalists in each of the last two seasons. They were the closest non-top flight side to actually nearly go through. They took bottom side Bristol City to extra time before bowing out to a Katie Robinson goal for the hosts. I have to say as well that Bristol did nearly score another in that added time period. So it was nearly 2-0 in the end. But
once it was done, it was done.
Yeah, that was it. It was done then. But at first half, really lacked chances from both sides. It was all about the second half, that one.
Fair play to Durham as well. Liverpool Blackburn, I took my eyes across this one. A huge 8-1 scoreline. Welcome news for Liverpool, struggling in the FAWSL, but earning a very convincing win against Blackburn. Player of the match, easily Rinsola Babajide, who scooped up half of Liverpool's goals. So 4 for her. And I think, you know, great for her in terms of being a striker and her confidence. She's looked less than clinical, hasn't she? Really failed to convince in front of goal.
Well, in WSL, season. She hasn't got a goal yet. So these goals in the cup, they could translate to her starting to score in the league, couldn't they?
Yeah, it was played at the Sir Tom Finney Stadium at the request of Liverpool because of the conditions at Prenton Park. And talking of conditions, we'll move on to another game, Sandpit, a bit later on. But look, really encouraging signs from Liverpool. Good linking up. Melissa Lawley, I thought, was very good down the right flank. Rachel Furniss, again, such a good signing, proving herself again. Neve Charles as well. And the return of Gemma Purfield after injury, had some good moments to keep the play pretty fluid. So good news there for Liverpool.
To Southport next. A stunning long-range Inessa Kagman strike proved decisive as Everton booked their spot in the next round with a 1-0 win over London Bees. The Netherlands international crashed in a 25-yard shot off the post. Those are always the best ones when they hit the post and go in. That was on the stroke of half-time. Everton, they were dominant in this one, and they will also be wanting that good result to then go into this Merseyside derby, which is a huge one next.
But the state of this pitch, Lindsay.
I mean,
Flo Lloyd-Hughes, who works for us here on the Offside Rule, made a joke about the competition for the worst pitch of the FA Cup fourth round. And Southport, I mean, awful. It was basically, you know how sometimes they put sand down to kind of stop the mud? Well, this was more sand than it was grass. I know that Matt
no sliding tackles there.
I'm literally just feeling
wincing. Matt Davis Adams, who of course regularly works across the Totally Football shows, I think he was there covering a Chelsea unders game there, and he said it was ridiculous because the players kept kicking up the sand and it was going into people's eyes. So must do better, Southport, and the state of that pitch. Had a quick look across London City Lionesses and Reading. Lindsay, England's most capped player, Farrah Williams, scoring twice. Reading winning this one 5-0 away to London City Lionesses. Very convincing from Reading. Organised throughout, 3-0 up at half time after a total of 16 shots on goal in the first half. And
wow,
that sort of tells you how it went. It just wasn't the Lionesses' way. They missed a pen. They fluffed a chance a few minutes later in the second half. So, yeah, as well as Farrah getting on the score sheet, there were goals for Joe Potter, Maz Pacheco and Lisa Marie Utland as well.
The FA Women's Super League account on Twitter actually put out some stats to do with Farrah Williams. You're nodding along here because you just know what sort of player she is. 128 appearances, 66 games won, 39 goals scored, 27 assists and 244 chances created.
She's a blooming hero, isn't
she? Not
bad.
Yeah. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I would. I think I would as well.
Could have been you, Shura, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, don't.
Let's go on to the rest of the fourth round ties. Ipswich, the lowest ranked team left in the competition after fellow National League Division 1 South East side Billericay Town lost on penalties at Lewes. Jubilant scenes as the Tractor Girls beat Huddersfield 4-1 at the John Smith Stadium, and that was a record crowd for Huddersfield, over 1,115 fans, and included a first half hat trick from a 16-year-old Maddie Biggs.
Another 16-year-old. Well, really delighted to say that joining us now on the line, Ipswich manager Joe Sheehan. Congratulations, Joe. Just tell us about this great win for your side.
Thank you very much. Yeah, a wonderful day for us and an excellent occasion that Huddersfield hosted in terms of obviously playing at the John Smith Stadium and, really good crowd present and, delighted to get the win and be in the hat for the next round.
For those now hearing the name Maddie Biggs for the first time, I mean, they wouldn't have heard it much earlier. She's only 16. Tell us about her and what people can maybe expect from her as a player in the future.
Yeah, so I've known Maddie quite a few years through the talent pathway, and I've had her previous, so I know what Maddie's capable of and has been exposed to playing for England at youth age groups at under 15 and 16. And yeah, is part of our very successful under 21 WSL Academy programme that we have. And a lot of those have been exposed to our first team, and Maddie as a first year has played a little part in the success we've had so far. And we'd watched a little bit of Huddersfield and we looked at maybe where we could expose them, and we thought this could be a game for Maddie, and we sensed it during the week. She's looked sharp. She scored against Arsenal and Chelsea the week before. So, we thought it was time to unleash her. And first half hat trick has paid off.
Not bad at all.
I suppose a serious note to this. Let's come on to prize money for a minute, because women's football journalist Claire Bloomfield, she's got an article in the Daily Mail today. You might have seen it. Inside women's football, rats in digs, jam sandwiches for lunch. The big three aside, few clubs are paying women players more than £20,000 a year. Of course, that's not even anywhere near your facility. But prize money for you for that one, £2,000 for winning. And when you look at the men's teams in comparison, of course, you're absolutely dwarfed by the difference in prize money. Is that something that irks you?
It does make things difficult. I mean, we had a situation in a round against Chichester where I think prize money was significantly less than that, and when you're forking out nearly £1,000 for a coach, the staff are voluntary, the players don't get paid any expenses, it's a long old day out for something that could potentially cost you more than you're actually getting back. So yesterday, obviously, the prize money yesterday was £2,000. The FA, because of the distance and I think the round we are in, contributed to the accommodation and the travel costs. So
that's
started to help us a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really helped. It allowed us to prepare how we wanted to prepare. But yeah, it's a tough one because, the money is significantly less.
Yeah, the men's team's got 180,000, which is not really what you want to hear. It doesn't. It's not.
Yeah,
that,
I think the way the game is going, I'm hoping that with more investors and more sponsors and more partners, that the more people will start coming in and the quality will improve, and hopefully that will that'll end up with more prize money.
Have your players played in front of a crowd that size before?
It's funny you should say that, because we briefed at the start of the game yesterday, and we honestly felt that we've got probably 7 or 8 of our players that are under the age of 18 that have been involved with England across the talent pathway. So we know we've got players that have played for their country in big games in other European countries. We know that we played Norwich back in September in front of nearly 1,000 on a Wednesday night, that a lot of our players played in. That a lot of our men's first team manager were there. A lot of the key stakeholders at the club were there. And there was an element of pressure with that, because I'd say 90% of the crowd had never watched women's football before. So that game to us was as big as we'll ever play in, really, because we had to perform that night, in front of, against our rivals, in front of a lot of people. That was a big game for us. So because of that, we almost feel that every game we now play is not really going to match up to that in terms of the expectation and the pressure and the crowd and the rivalry. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, we actually felt that yesterday was just another game, and we looked at our players at breakfast yesterday in the hotel, and they did look incredibly relaxed. So yeah, it did feel like it was just another game to them.
We're recording just before the draw is made. I'm just wondering who it is you would like in the next round.
Yeah, well, looking at it, I mean, I think Billericay are in our league that come close to beating Lewes yesterday. So that in mind, maybe they're a team that, we've got a good chance against.
Ooh, perhaps. What about a big side, Joe? Is there a little bit of you that would like to come up against a Manchester City or an Arsenal?
I think Joe's clearly telling us there. He wants to go all the way.
Well, it's funny that because, I think like most, 16, 17-year-old girls go to the final year on year. And it was funny, actually, that when the ticket promotion went out last year, none of our players bought tickets. And they said, we're going to try and get there first. And if we don't, then we'll buy the ticket. So six games later, I'm starting to wonder if maybe they're right.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media.
Well, let's sum up the other games. Of course, a bumper set of fixtures. Tottenham were comfortable 5-0 winners over fourth-tier Barnsley. Manager Karen Hills praised her side's professional performance, which included a first senior goal for development squad player Alicia Solola.
It was also plain sailing for Birmingham. They won 3-0 at Sheffield United. That included a brace from Harriet Scott.
Not so easy for Brighton, though, Linz. They suffered a late scare, but managed to hold on to beat Championship leaders Aston Villa 3-2.
Championship side Leicester had the better of National League Northern Premier side Burnley. A 3-1 win for the Foxes in that one.
It was a battle of the Northern versus Southern National League leaders when Sunderland hosted Watford. It was Sunderland who came out on top, beating the Hornets 2-0. Meanwhile, Crawley Wasps took advantage in their absence to go top of the table. So a bad day all round for Watford on both sides.
Coventry United have been inconsistent in the Championship recently. They got a 4-1 win over fourth-tier Southampton Women. It's the side affiliated with the men's club. And the game was played at St Mary's, the first time the women's side have played there in front of just over 4,500 people. And then we thought we'd made it through a weekend without having any more pitch problems.
But no, incredibly, Southampton FC Women versus Crystal Palace was abandoned with just 10 minutes to go because the pitch was too wet to continue. The Offside Rule's Stu Barker was there. He actually said it started off OK, the pitch. It was muddy, but as long as the weather held, it was going to be OK. But the weather did not hold. The rain lashed down. And in the second half, with just 10 or so minutes to go, Palace were 3-0 up at the time. But the referee decided to call off the game, which Stu said he did feel was the right decision. Girls on the Ball, a fantastic account to follow on Twitter, by the way, and online, if you've heard of them. Great fans of female football. They go everywhere. They were at the game too, and they described the playing surface as a mud bath.
Yes, the club also tweeted afterwards. It sounded very Big Brother. The FA will decide what happens next.
Yes. So we await that decision. Of course, we're recording on Monday afternoon at the moment, so we'll have to see when that comes through. Well, the draw for the fifth round taking place later on today. That's Monday. That's going to be shown on the BBC. So we'll know very soon who plays who in the fifth round. It's human.
The dulcet tones there of Shura, and more music scattered throughout this podcast. And we're going to bring it all back to you again now because we want to know more about you as a musician. We found out about you as the footballer, 16, deciding to leave the game. How did music come into your life from that point?
Well, I actually think music was partly responsible for my having left the game, because the one thing that I, growing up in Manchester, that was kind of horrible about playing football was having to go out on very early on a Saturday or a Sunday morning in freezing cold conditions and being told to wear shorts and a t-shirt. And when I picked up a guitar about age 13, I realised that suddenly, once I learned a few chords, that rather than freezing to death on a weekend, I could stay inside and just talk about my feelings.
In your pyjamas.
In my pyjamas and be warm. And also that I wouldn't have to go into school on Monday morning hobbling with kind of various straps on my ankles and all that sort of stuff.
You must have had very sore knees after all those sliding tackles. Just when the top of the skin comes off. Yeah. Do you know what it is? Horrible.
I mean, I never did not hobble on a kind of Monday morning. It was a joke at my school that I was always kind of injured.
Did you not have from plucking a guitar though, did you not have your fingers?
Well, calluses at the end of your fingers compared to kind of half your knee skin being kind of shorn off by AstroTurf is...
it's no comparison.
It's not really, yeah.
So you're a performer, you sing, you're a music producer, and you write your own music as well. Where does the inspiration come from? And has that been the same from an early age, or how has that evolved as you've gotten older?
I've always written kind of from personal experience. There's lots of people who, I mean, it's quite common to sort of write about your life. I've always found it easy to do it that way. So I normally normally going through some sort of emotional turmoil, and then I'm like, oh great, then I can have a song.
So it's actually easier to write. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. If you're
miserable,
if you're going through. Okay.
If you're miserable.
We all know that from Alanis Morissette, don't
yeah.
we?
Come on. Exactly. But no, I have been pretty happy the last few years. So that's presented a different challenge. But what's been great is discovering that actually positive like feelings and emotions can be just as inspiring. I just never really had them for a prolonged time before.
You released your first album back in, was it 2015, 2016?
2016 for the first record.
And then your most recent one was released last year.
Yeah.
How are they different? And I guess for you, what's the aim when you release an album? Are you quite kind of precious in sort of music terms and say, well, I'm not bothered whether this does well or not because it's just important that I've done it? Or is there an aim? Do you have to think about commercial stuff as well when all this is going on?
I think there's enough people working with you whose job it is to worry about that stuff that it's great not to.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing is, as a musician, as a writer, is to create space for yourself to be creative. So I try not to. I mean, of course, we think about stuff and worry about stuff. But I certainly didn't go into music to make an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
Similarly, I didn't play football to make an awful lot of money. So I'm not driven by kind of commercial success. I am driven by a need to sort of express myself in a way that is fun, you know, whether that's on a football pitch or on a record.
Well, also for your music to be recognised and to be available for people to listen to, which is I guess the great thing about having so many streaming services and so many different ways that we can consume music, whether it's through iTunes, whether it's through Spotify. And, you know, you've picked up a fair bit of recognition along the way as well.
And also the first song that I ever released kind of had this viral music video. For me, in a way, like I had more success with the first thing that I ever released than I ever dreamed of having over an entire career.
Yeah.
So that was quite nice.
Why
did
it become viral?
I just think that it was a video of, you know, all my, you know, quite attractive friends kissing in slow motion. So I think people were just like, oh, I'll watch that again.
And you edited this video, right? Shura is also a video editor.
All I'm thinking is sex sells. It's the oldest rule of time, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I had no money to make a video and I was just like, well, what would be nice with this like slightly sexy, sad song about a breakup? I know, slow motion kissing. and it worked.
Look, it worked for Katy Perry. Got her career off to a great start as well. I wonder if you can combine the two in the sense that with the World Cup in France last year, you may remember in the build-up to it, for some months, everyone was like, we need a Lionesses song. Because you've always got Frank Skinner's offering in the men's. We need an anthem. Are you going to answer that call?
Oh, that would be a really good idea. And I can also think of a lot of my friends who are musicians and also big football fans who play football who might kind of want to do that together. Like I'm thinking about Marika Hackman, for instance, great musician, loves her football. Like maybe we all just need to get
together. The
challenge
together has been set.
There we go. Yeah. It needs answering.
I also need some Any Other Business
It'll be
music.
My first number one ever.
We also have a section called Any Other Business, and I am looking for an Any Other Business
theme. Oh, I knew you'd come on to this.
I just thought I'd lay it out there. Just to sort of finish up on this, I know that you've just recently joined football teams in London and in New York, where you spend a lot of your time. So exciting for you to be back keeping fit, but also to be re-engaging, you know, playing the game that you spent so much time on in your younger years.
Yeah, I mean, I think it brought me so much joy as a child playing football. And obviously it's important to keep fit. And I know I split my time between New York and London. And I've been meaning to sort of play football for years or get back into playing football. And a friend of mine said, you should come and join this team called Gold Diggers in London. That's where I
know
play.
Gold Diggers. Yeah.
And so I've been kind of thinking about it for quite a few months and being a bit nervous about it because, of course, turning up to hang out with 48 other people who you've never met before in your life is quite an intimidating thing, but they're so lovely and it's been so much fun to train with them, and I'm really excited to, you know, carry on just skinning my knees every Wednesday evening, and then also in New York. I'm looking forward to sort of, so I'm gonna, I don't know if that's even allowed to play for two teams at the same time, but I guess if it's
totally
on the others,
I mean, when there's an ocean between them, I think you get away
and
with it.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how they treat the game in their spare time over in New York compared to how gold diggers do.
Yeah, we need to hook you up with Nick Cushing.
Exactly.
I can go watch some game. I did certainly notice when I was at university that I played for the women's team at UCL, and I do remember that we would have students from American universities coming for a year abroad. And I do remember that the American girls were very shocked by how little we trained in the UK, and they take soccer incredibly seriously in the States, and you know, it's kind of bigger,
particularly
for, bigger
level,
for women.
That's the entrance into the American leagues.
Yeah,
taken very seriously.
Well, we wish you the best with the rest of your career, and we'd love to hear you back debuting the Lionesses song for 2021 Euros.
It's already written.
Yes,
I've got it all.
The Euros 2021. Yeah. Sure, this is an opportunity that cannot be missed.
I know. I'm like writing it, scribbling it down in my notes.
Here's a few names you can put in the songs. Okay, if you want to do one worldwide, we've got a transfer roundup from around the world. You probably should do a Matilda's song as well. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. After a deluge of Australian players, Lindsay.
WSL and Championship transfer window slam shut on Thursday. So we're going to bring you right up to date with the last minute movers and shakers and contract extensions, beginning with Arsenal.
Caitlin Ford, this has finally been announced. She is now an Arsenal player. At the age of 16, she was named in the Matildas squad for the 2011 FIFA Women's World Cup in Germany, awarded Best Young Player. So that tells you some of the pedigree she has. I know we've spoken to Alicia Ferguson about her as well. Awesome player, will be very useful to Arsenal indeed, and I'm looking forward to seeing her.
Brighton and Republic of Ireland striker Rhianna Jarrett, subject to international clearance. The 25-year-old signed a six-month contract with the club until the 30th of June to see out the rest of this season. And that's following her expired deal with Wexford Youth.
Are you ready for another Aussie?
We are ready for another Aussie. That's more South African. I can't do accents. South Africa. How do I do Australia? I'm from the Midlands, and I always, when I went on holiday when I was a youngster, everyone thought, being from the Black Country, that I was from Australia. Can't I do it?
I don't know.
Why can't I do it?
Don't go anywhere near Bristol City's new signing, Chloe Legazzo, for a while until you've got it sorted. She's signed from Sydney FC for a 1.5-year deal. She's 25, been part of the Matilda squad for 7 years, made over 40 appearances. So very much bedded in on the international scene. She'll be a welcome addition to Bristol City, I'm sure. Striker winger Maxine Bennick arrives also from Brighton on loan until the end of the season.
After my awful attempt, please do Liverpool's one as well.
It's another Australian. Riley Foster. Aussie goalkeeper. Listen, this is a great signing for Liverpool, actually. Bought in as extra cover after Fran Kitchen and that horror injury over her head. But the nice thing about this story is that she has Never Walk Alone tattooed on her bicep as Riley Foster. And because her grandparents are originally from Liverpool. So they say that synchronicity happens. And so has it done so at Liverpool. So, yeah, welcome to her.
Nick Cushing leaves Manchester City knowing that his captain, Steph Horton, will be there for some time. She signed a contract extension. Big news for them. Manchester United and midfielder Amy Palmer has been brought back from her loan at Sheffield United.
Finally, West Ham, Republic of Ireland forward Ruaisha Littlejohn has signed a deal until the end of the season. She'd originally been playing with the club on non-contract terms. And Kate Longhurst has signed a new 2.5-year deal.
Now, I'm no songwriter, right? But when you've got a player, Ruaisha Littlejohn, suddenly I'm thinking all sorts of music to do with Sherwood Forest.
I mean, I think that you might have to come in and write this with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where my brain goes.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's Lindsay. It's non-optional. You're writing it with us.
There's going to be a great song in the crowd, I think, at West Ham for Little John. Come on.
Really?
Yeah, there has to be.
It is a fairly common surname.
Well,
anyway. Listen, it's the Conti Cup this week, everyone. Conti Cup semi-finals. Manchester United versus Chelsea. Arsenal play Man City. Wednesday evening, 7:30. Lindsay, who do you fancy? I mean, these are great ties to get your head round, aren't they?
It's so difficult because it's the last game or one of the last games before Nick Cushing departs. I wonder if Manchester City are going to go all out in this to try and get him into a final before he leaves.
Yeah, possibly, but they are playing away.
But Arsenal have been looking good.
Okay, I'm going to say Chelsea, just because of the depth of their squad. A lot of their key players were rested at the weekend, of course, when they came up against Charlton in the FA Cup. So for me, I can see Chelsea making their way through against Manchester United.
I think it might be a Chelsea City final.
Oh, sure for you on these Conti Cup semi-finals. Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City.
I mean, as a former City player, I think I've got to go with City.
Well, one man, of course, who's going to be all across it, Manchester City women manager Nick Cushing. He leaves to take up the post of assistant manager of MLS side New York City at the end of this week. It's his final game this weekend. Let's have a chat.
So let's talk about your final week then, Nick, in Manchester. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'm excited because we've got two games that we wanted to be involved in at the start of the season, in the sense of we're nearly in February and we've got an opportunity to get into the League Cup final, which is the first trophy that we play for. And, you know, we can go 3 points clear at the top of the league if we beat Arsenal at home. But, you know, we know that they're going to be incredibly difficult games. We know that we've beaten Arsenal in previous seasons, but we've also been beaten by them. And obviously being the last week and the last two games that I'm going to do as the coach of the team, it's probably gives us a little bit more, me personally, a little bit more motivation to try and make sure we get two wins. But for me, it's about making sure the team's set up to go and achieve what we set out at the start of the year, and that's win trophies. And, you know, Saturday gives us an opportunity for the draw this afternoon. And then obviously Wednesday gets us into the final of a cup that we hold. And then, you know, the big game at home and the league game, I think either whatever happens on Wednesday, Sunday will be such a big game.
It is a huge game. You're sitting top of the WSL at the moment, Arsenal in second. And of course, it would be lovely for you to leave the club with your side top of the league. That must be just a small personal ambition of yours before you go.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, we've had so much success over the last six seasons and I've met some incredible people. I've worked with some brilliant staff and we've developed Manchester City Women's from not ever playing a game into where it is now. And, you know, of course, the objective for me is to make sure that we leave the club in a place, you know, where the next manager and the players that are here can continue to be successful. And, you know, I feel like I've left the club with a good foundation, irrelevant of what happens over the next 7 days. You know, we've put the foundations in for a club that can go on and be successful in England, can go on and be successful in Europe. But, you know, of course, I want to win the last two games because, you know, they mean so much to the team.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Nick, covering the majority of your career in 6 years at Manchester City. I've seen quite a few different league titles handed to you and cup competitions. And I've even seen you running down the touchline when you thought that you were going to become a father. And there was lashings of rain that day. There's so many things that I'm sure you look back on. But in terms of standout memories, what would you say is the overriding one?
I think there's two, really. I think the first trophy in 2014 was incredibly important. When I reflect now, it was incredibly important for the club, for the belief, for recruitment of players for 2015, for Champions League qualification the following season. That trophy really was the catalyst for that. But then also, you know, 2017, leading the team out at Wembley. Steph Orton, Manchester City England captain, led the team out with my eight-year-old son, Harry, and we went on to lift the FA Cup, which is such an iconic trophy and such an iconic stadium. It was definitely a real career highlight of mine.
Do you know, I met you when we were doing the inaugural WSL1 and WSL2 launch. I think it was over at BT Sport. And we actually hadn't heard too much about you, Nick, although you'd been at the club for some time beforehand. And I think it's safe to say that, you know, about 6 years on, you've thoroughly made your name in English women's football. And you're, of course, heading across the pond now to New York City, to the MLS and the men's game. What challenges do you expect, both personally and professionally, when you head over?
I think professionally the challenge will be to support a head coach. You know, I've been a head coach now for six seasons and the role will slightly change in the sense of Ronnie is the head coach and I'm there assisting him and supporting him. But I feel at the stage of my career that I'm at, to be a better head coach, I think I've got to go and support somebody with more experience. I think the challenge is to continue winning. I think the MLS is an incredibly competitive league where, you know, New York, we want to be successful. We're probably in the same position we were in at Manchester City Women's in 2016, where we'd put in some years of foundation. We'd done really well, but we now want to go on and win titles. And, you know, I'm excited for this year with New York. I think personally, it's, you know, going to a different culture, taking my wife, my children out, you know, new house, new schools. It's almost starting a new life. But, you know, we're excited for that. I understand that, you know, in football, those things happen and you have to move about and opportunities come from all over the world. It's such a global game. Mm. But, you know, we're excited for we're excited for the change and the challenge.
I'm sure you can get advice from other coaches in terms of adapting to the culture over there. You know, Emma Hayes has coached in America, Matt Beard, Laura Harvey. I'm sure you know quite a lot of these names that you can talk to, but none of them going over to the men's game. Do you think that there's going to be more of this in the future where leagues across the world look to the women's game and coaches that have been in charge for some time and had considerable success and maybe poaching them more?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, coming to Manchester City Women's from the Boys Academy was never, I never saw that as a negative. I never had a negative perception of that. It was a huge opportunity for me. And, you know, I would happily come back from New York in the future and be the head coach of a women's team. You know, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't see any difference in coaching in the men's or the women's game. I see myself as a coach. You know, I've been asked multiple questions when I was in the job of, you know, do I feel I'm blocking the pathway for female coaches? And now I'm going over to the men's game. I'm getting asked, you know, am I leaving the women's game for the men's game?
Because
the men's game is better. So, yeah, I do think that as a football club, whether it be men's or women's, I think the aim is to look for the best person. And there's some incredible coaches in the women's game. I actually spoke to Emma at Lent about New York. She lived in New York for 7 years when she was over in America, and she's helped me a lot. And, you know, I think, whether it is the men's or the women's games, like I say, I think there's some very, very good coaches. And, you know, for me, it's about trying to become the best coach I can be to either return to the women's game or continue on in the men's game.
Nick Cushing there. So let's have a quick look at next weekend's fixtures as well. And his final game, Manchester City against Arsenal, level on points, separated on goal difference and by just one goal.
Liverpool play Birmingham, 10th versus 11th. Whoever wins this could get a cushion away from the relegation spots. Important game.
There's also Brighton against Everton, Chelsea v West Ham. Chelsea poised to take advantage depending on how City and Arsenal finishes.
Reading play Manchester United and finally Tottenham host Bristol City.
Let's move on to any other business.
Listen, we've already had some Matildas chat already on this podcast, but I feel that we need to mention a pretty strong intervention from the side, who have requested that February's Tokyo 2020 qualifiers have been moved from China to Sydney. That's, of course, because of the coronavirus.
I think we'll see more things like that happening throughout sport, actually. This story has been gaining traction as well. A female footballer has been speaking out. Sue Lopez, a pioneer of women's football, has become the first female player to publicly blame her dementia on years of heading the ball. Could open so many different studies, couldn't it, this?
Yeah.
She was the first British woman to play semi-professionally abroad. She represented England 22 times during a career spanning 3 decades.
She said she wanted young footballers to stop heading the ball amid research suggesting women concussed more easily. We know that there are suggestions of that in the men's game, and already I think in Scotland they don't allow under-12s to head the ball. So this is an ongoing story.
That and ACL injuries that people are looking into as well.
Lots of research going on. There's an interesting piece from Susie Rack, I think, about that one.
Well, that's all from this week's show. We'll be back with more next week as ever, when we'll react to that massive clash at the top of the table, plus all the other weekend's action, including Conti Cup as well.
Yeah, be sure to take a look at the website. We've got Alistair Hooper looking at how Guro Wrighton could be regarded as the WSL's most underrated player.
No relation.
There is going to be full review of the FA Cup fourth round there for you as well, and plenty more to get stuck into too. It's offsiderulepodcast.com.
Thank you very much, Shura, for joining us. What is on the agenda, first of all, for the rest of this year and beyond?
Well, I'm off to Thailand and Japan at the end of this week on Thursday for some shows, which is pretty exciting.
I bet they love you.
I bet they're
well,
a great audience.
Kind of got,
I've never been.
Oh,
this is my first time going to Japan, so I'm very excited.
I think it'll
excited.
Go well.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm slightly sad that it means I'll probably miss 2 weeks of training.
So I like this now.
No, I'm really into it. I can't believe that I haven't joined one sooner. It's
too
late.
You are
hotel gym for you.
Yeah,
just have to stick around the gig. Yeah.
Just ask people to bash my knees for me, just to simulate, you know, a week's training.
Well, if you have been enjoying Shura's music, do look her up. Shura, Shura. You can find her on most places that you can download music, and please
do. Most places, somewhere. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Dolly Parton challenge.
Oh, I did. Someone did.
Did
that
you do
for,
that?
A fan did it for me, and
oh,
it's
really?
Just a series of Baby Yodas in different. Because I'm quite a big Baby Yoda fan as well. Yeah, but I might do my own. I definitely found my LinkedIn picture. I just haven't decided on the others. Yeah.
I'm the opposite. I found all of the other ones apart from the Tinder one.
Yeah,
I haven't even looked yet. I feel like this is too much of my time needed.
The thing is, the Tinder one, You could just find the best picture of you. Which
I have
is what
got a
would,
Tinder one, actually. Yeah. I've got one where I'm stood on a table dancing. Yeah. Would be perfect, wouldn't it?
Or you do, you do that. You go down that route. Like, it's like, do you put the sexiest picture of you down or do you put, like, the most hilarious picture of you down? It's like, I haven't decided. I haven't come down on one side or the other yet.
Okay. Well, it's been such a pleasure.
I'll work on yours, Kate.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, Shireen.
No,
good luck.
You.
Thank you very much for sharing this week's show with us. Listeners, we will speak to you again next week.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule WSL Edition, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And for more from The Offside Rule, head to our website, offsiderulepodcast.com.
Muddy Knees Media.